it's really easy to look at it, put in a good prompt, get some great output and think, wow, that is written really well, the English, the grammar, the etc. But are your actual messages there? Is what you wanted to do, is what you would have done as a copywriter in your example, is that there too?
Hello and welcome to Land and Deliver, the podcast where we help you land your messages and deliver it with impact. Now, today we're talking about AI, a little bit different. There's no Louise here today, so in a different podcasting studio. But we're talking about AI, really. And you know, there's a lot of hype around AI, a lot of panic, actually, too, and a lot of what we would call polished nonsense, maybe. And somewhere in the middle of all that, you know, most of us are left trying to work out a much simpler question. You know, with AI, it's all brand new and it all seems to be taken over really, really quickly. So, you know, should we be worried about this? You know, should we be using it? We're told we are, but should we really? It's just a waste of time. Is it going to pass us by? And if we do use it, you know, how do we use it in a way that we don't lose our judgment or lose ourselves in it, you know, and just your ability to be creative, maybe if you're leading a marketing team. So today on Land and Deliver, we're talking about AI, but in a real human way. And I'm really pleased to introduce you to Kim Mason. Kim is from Nailed AI. And what I really like about Kim, bussing you up here, Kim, is that, you know, you talk about AI I've invited you in today because, you know, you did a course near where I live, and it was just really, really eye-opening for someone like myself who leans into AI. You know, you talk about AI in a real clear, grounded way, and your company is Nailed AI, and I really thought it was just something that, you know, it's not something for coders or tech people. You know, it can be something that real businesses and real people need to understand without losing themselves. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So let's just kind of give us an opening description then of, you know, your approach to talking about AI.
I kind of came to AI, you know, early on when ChatGPT came out to start with, and just found it very, very curious, very, very interesting. I'm a non-techie at heart. I've had problems with Microsoft all my life. I don't like PowerPoint, all these normal things, and I couldn't code for toffee. But I found that the idea of using language to steer and drive a computer to do some of the things I really got frustrated with doing, that to me was just so fascinating. But in its early days, it was so wobbly and gave the weirdest answers that I didn't really understand what I was doing, but just carried on playing and got more and more interested until fast forward 3 years and here I am.
I'd be really interesting to understand, actually, when you're, you know, you go out quite a lot to speak to groups of people and talk to them about AI, you know, what's the general feeling at the moment to AI, and have you seen that shift when they, you know, at the end of your morning session or day session, you know, how are you finding that?
I think from an individual basis, I'm seeing everybody on what I think of as my sort of enthusiasm curve, which is like at one end, you've got the excited, the opportunity, the wow, we could be doing this, this and this. And at the other end, you've got that fear and caution and I don't know where to start. This is really confusing. I don't know how to get started. Will somebody please help me make sense of that? And a whole load of people in the middle feeling both, which is weird. It's quite conflicting. From a business perspective, people are much more reflecting and I don't know how to get started. And when I'm talking about businesses, I'm talking mainly about SMEs here, maybe businesses up to about 300-400 people. Mm. Beyond that, people might have, you know, an AI person themselves. They might have innovation capabilities, all these kind of more technical things. But those smaller businesses, they don't know how to get started. So the biggest thing is, but do we buy a tool? And it's like, well, that's not necessarily what you need to think about. Does your leadership team have an understanding of AI? Are you on the same page, to use a great cliche? That sort of thing. So I feel a lot of friction and inertia around how to start, but in a managed way that just keeps people progressing.
And just talking about that friction for a minute, I think, you know, and that probably that mindset is, you know, a lot of people think that AI is technical. It almost reminds me, you know, when I was a kid and you had the VCR machine there, ask your grandma, And, you know, it was the kid that set it because it was just way too technical. And it almost feels like we're back there now, but AI isn't your VCR, your computer, whatever. It's a different beast altogether, isn't it, really, in many ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I think businesses are making one of the mistakes of treating AI adoption as an IT rollout. And it's not. It is not best led by IT. That's now kind of a best practice agreement. The beauty of it is that people who have expertise in their own roles, when they're given tools like AI and large language models that help them do things, they can bring their language and communication skills to the fore. So if you've got the mindset of potentially being quite curious, being quite playful, being quite happy to experiment, and you've got good language skills, you're actually really, really well placed to be a great driver of AI and a great adopter in the future, whilst understanding that what good looks like is your own area of expertise. So, for example, I couldn't really use AI very well at all to do video editing or make a podcast because I haven't got a clue how to make a podcast. You know, I really don't. I'm sitting here talking to you. That's all I know. But anyone who's capable in that area will go, oh, no, but this is what good looks like. You'll need a story like this. You'll need to shoot it like that. You'll need this lighting, this sound. There's so much to it. I couldn't use AI to help me with a podcast unless it was really structured and set up.
So should we, you know, fear it, ignore it, or, you know, engage with it, but it's really big and how do we even start? You know, what mindset should we be taking here at this point?
I think it's really, really important to have a balanced mindset. And I think the fear that some people carry inside them is really important to just to keep that guardrail of critical thinking when you're using a tool like AI, because it is a big and powerful tool and is in many, many tools. But you need that optimism and playfulness and that urge to experiment to make it all work. So if you don't engage, the question might be more around, what happens to our children who will be using it by default? I mean, it's a general purpose technology. That's what it's called. So you think of it more like electricity than perhaps another computer. The idea of not engaging with electricity is impossible to think about now. But people thought a bit like that when electricity first came out. So our children are going to be living with this. Our nieces, nephews, our young people coming through, this is going to be bread and butter to them. So not engaging with it is quite, you know, it's got some real risks down the road.
Yeah, playing devil's advocate here at this point, because you know, let's address some of the elephants in the room, because what was really interesting in the course that I did with you, a whole mix of people in the room, is, you know, opinions and thoughts and feelings about AI is really strongly held. And there's quite a lot of fear. And there's a lot of talk about AI slop. So people who don't know perhaps what AI slop even is, just take me through that fear and what that is and, you know, how we people
think
about it.
That fear, I think, where you're talking about AI slop, really. So AI slop in my head, as far as I'm aware for other people too, is really where people are using AI to generate things quickly and quite fast, which AI can do very well. In particular, writing content is the one that we all see and read on our socials, and image content. So if you ask an AI to create something and then go, right, write me a post about this, and brrr, out comes the post, great, and then you go, send, it's still your work. You know, you wouldn't write something yourself with your eyes blindfolded and then hit send, which is kind of what you've done, which is why it looks and feels like slop. Plus, if you haven't given it enough information to write a post in the way that you speak, in the way that you want to get your messages across, in the way that you want to communicate, you're going to have something that feels really, really generic. And that feeling of poor quality, generic, unchecked work is slop.
It's funny, actually, because I had a good conversation with my barber, a guy I was cutting my hair, and we were talking about AI. And he was like saying, oh, you know, it had to be slop or whatever. And I said, well, you know, you have someone right now upstairs who's your apprentice and is cutting hair. I bet you don't let him just go on someone's head straight away. And I bet even 3 years down the line, you've been teaching all your skills. I bet you still will be looking over his or her shoulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yet we expect AI to not need that.
Yeah, but people say sort of compare it exactly that to your junior intern at work or something, or a PhD level brain. but in a person with no common sense and world experience at all yet. So what do you expect if you ask them to do something very quickly until they've learned all about you and how you want to do your craft or your work? It can't produce quality. And you wouldn't, you know, let them cut your hair until they've been trained.
And there is a real fear about AI taking over jobs. But the thing is that we've been here before, right? We've had industrial revolution. We've had revolutions before. And, you know, but there is a real fear about AI taking people's jobs.
Definitely. I think that's one of the biggest conversations in a loud, in an economic way and across the world at the moment around AI. The data is mixed at the moment. So in terms of what's actually happening, nobody's really clear. One study will tell you this. Yes, it's taking jobs. Another study will tell you, no, it's not. It's creating them. So the truth is probably really, really, really nuanced and nobody's really sure where that's going. What it's important to think of is that this change is probably faster and harder than other changes we've had, like the introduction of electricity, industrial revolution, calculators, pick your scale of change. But because that pace of change is fast and change is in itself frightening to humans, you know, humans like consistency. Mm. That is what people are experiencing. And I think that's where a lot of the fear comes from. And the idea that jobs will change, yes, they will. How fast will they change and how can we keep up is probably a better question.
You know, I remember people were saying when I was at school, you know, the job you'll be going for in 20, 30 years' time doesn't even exist yet. The same will happen for AI, won't it?
Enormously. It's already happening. I mean, you know, I started but didn't finish a bit of a study on new job titles that were coming out in the world of AI, just looking through LinkedIn and researching through that. So about 2 or 3 years ago, there was prompt engineering, where a prompt is what the words you use to talk to AI. And that was a job for a bit, 2 or 3 years ago. That's actually gone away. So that job has come and gone in 2 years. And now you've got people like AI infrastructure engineers and people much more on the technical side. And now you've got people like me, AI trainers, AI adoption consultants. You've got people working in AI behavior and mindset. You've got people working in every sector and every niche around and on AI already. So I'm seeing lots of new employment in my bubble. And I'm not yet seeing the lack of employment, but that's, you know, it's very nuanced and it's definitely happening and it's all about change.
And we'll come to it later on, but I think that's a really good point about prompting. I think that's one of the things we'll talk about later on about mindset, is that it's not about the numbers and the ones and zeros. It's almost about those old-fashioned language skills about AI. And that's one of, I think, the big things that hopefully we'll demystify in the podcast. And the other thing, and we had a great chat at the dining room table the other day, me and my wife and my daughter, about, you know, and it's really weird because, you know, my wife's a deputy head teacher, my daughter's about to go to take a degree, and, you know, they're really suspicious about AI. And, you know, talking about, you know, bubble brains where you kind of prompt and paste and don't think very deeply about what you're doing, so it almost like AI kind of starts to strip away your knowledge because you're trusting this thing to do it. And so you don't learn and deeply embed your learning or your expertise. If you're, say, you know, in a marketing team, you're writing copy, but, you know, and actually even this planner, which you noticed, which I haven't told you yet, is, you know, I might have started, but by the end of it gone, yeah, that's about right. And then obviously you being the expert gone, I think we need to change those questions. You know, even I was starting to get a little bit lazy towards the end of my planning for this podcast, and people worry about that it suddenly starts to strip away their expertise.
Oh, 100%. I think 100% on all of that, because everybody I know experiences that urge to get something out the door, to get some work done. You know, you've got the commercial pressures of your job, or if you're self-employed, of your own business, whatever it is you're doing, you've got those pressures to do more, do it quicker. And you've got to balance that. When someone gives you a tool like AI, which could help you do something more quickly, but the compromise might be quality, how do you balance that? You know, so it's really easy to look at it, put in a good prompt, get some great output and think, wow, that is written really well, the English, the grammar, the etc. But are your actual messages there? Is what you wanted to do, is what you would have done as a copywriter, in your example, is that there too? But it's like, oh yeah, but the job's done. Just send it, Kim. Just send it. Just post it. Just do it. You know, so I have very much been guilty of that. When I start doing something, and I think, oh, that'll do. I'll send it. And you have to stop. You have to take a beat. You have to say nothing. My mantra is nothing goes Nothing gets used or goes out the door unless it gets checked. And it's still your copywriting. That's what people forget.
Yeah.
It's still yours if it's got your name on it or if you want to be proud of your work. You can't prompt and paste. And that's got to keep that bubble brain you talked about, that feeling of not thinking something through because the output looks good. That's definitely a thing. And it's such a, there's a high temptation to go in and get that job done, despite the quality not being what you're happy with, because you've got another piece of work behind it and another one.
There is an opportunity for everybody to use AI because it's not like computers.
I think so. One of the places I recommend people start if they're feeling really hesitant and haven't really got their hands dirty with it is to start with personal stuff at home. So for me, I do a bit of bread making mixtures, and I'm relatively new to sourdough, which has a whole life of its own. So when I've left my sourdough in the fridge for 24 hours instead of 8 hours, I take a photograph of it, explain to something like ChatGPT what I've just done, and say, what do I do now? Do I stick it straight in the oven? Do I let it prove somewhere warm? What do I do? I don't know what to do. And it says, well, the funniest response was once it just saying, well, maybe bake it anyway, but call it a flatbread. And I just thought, oh, sorry, but that's a playful answer to a sort of unserious question. You know, and if you've got areas in your work, if you're running your own business or something, where you haven't got strengths, then using it as a thinking partner, although my sourdough is a bit facetious example, but, you know, you've got a thinking partner there that can fill in the gaps of what you don't know. And starting there, starting with personal stuff at home is really helpful.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? Actually, ChatGPT, it could be a good thing, a bad thing, always wants to please, doesn't it? Always wants to, it's your eager beaver, your eager buddy, isn't it?
Totally sycophantic. You have to train it. You have to dig deeper into the settings and kind of personalize it to talk the way you want to.
Yeah.
And then I've given it something called a banned botty buzzwords list, which is a list of kind of 200 words and some phrases which it's never allowed to use. Like there's a leverage and solutions and all sorts of corporate words. So it's got that. And I've trained that just once. I've told it once and it's got that in its memory. So it never uses any of those words in any of my writing that I might use it to help me with.
Fantastic. And that's really about conversation, though. You know, you're talking to it like you're talking to, you know, an intern or someone who's, you know, really, really intelligent. So, you know, perhaps someone who's just passed their degree but haven't got the life experience. Would that be a right way of kind of talking to
Definitely
it?
Definitely. A really, really, really clever brain with masses and masses of kind of understanding and knowledge of things that might have been available in its training data, which if you think of the internet as it's mostly its training data, that's an easy way to grasp it. And then the way that you're going to be talking it is like briefing it. You've got to give it really clear instructions, lots and lots of context to get the right thing out. But also the way you talk to it has changed so much over the last couple of years. To start with, there was prompting frameworks, which is like, tell it to do this in this way, give it the context, tell it the output. That might be a sort of framework of how to talk to it to get a really good outcome if you wanted to write, say, a particular piece of work. But now I would say, right, slow down and think, interview me. So you ask your chatbot, your AI, if that's the level you're at, you ask it to interview you about what it is you want to do right now. Are you trying to write a report on something? Are you trying to do some market research? Are you trying to create an image? Get it to interview you so it pulls the brief out of you. And any marketers especially will understand, you know, the power of a good brief. And once it's got the brief, you can say, right, go. Or it'll decide. It'll say, I think I've got enough information now. Shall I go and create the image, research, report, blah, blah?
That's really interesting. That's a learn for me, actually, because I think it's moving so fast. The way I've been doing it currently is almost writing as I speak. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether this is the right thing to do or not, but I sometimes almost write a little bit randomly. Mm-hmm. So rather than kind of thinking like a computer and writing prompts, step one, step two, step three, I almost just splurt it out. And even with bad grammar and everything, I try and just mix. In my way, I try and mix its brain up and I'll just say what I'm thinking, which is brilliant. And then it'll kind of go off. But that's really interesting where you're saying, you know, asking it to interview you and to talk to you about something. So then actually it's asking the questions it needs and you just sit there and chat. And
yeah.
Then,
yeah. It's gathering the information it needs to do the job. So you're starting really with your objective. You're starting with saying, what I'm trying to do now is this. What do you need to know? And that's all it needs as a prompt. Yeah. And then you will iterate. So the idea of that prompt and paste that you mentioned earlier, that's really, really gone. You know, the chances of the first bit of writing or work or image generation or something that it does being what you need is very, very low. So always think about that, you know, iteration. Ah, okay, we've got that. Can we tweak the tone? Can we add a summary? Can we do whatever else we want?
So you could say, for example, I don't know, I want to create an image of a lovely countryside scene about the environment for World Environment Day or something. Ask me 6 questions about what I want in that picture.
That would be perfect. Yeah, perfect place to start.
And then I'll ask you the question, you answer it, and then it will generate the image after that. So actually, if you're not sure where to start, just a simple prompt like that could give quite a good result.
Yeah, I find this almost starting with a smaller prompt, but having your objective clear is a better way to go, and then ask for that interview.
Take us through how it thinks, because it's not necessarily how we think it thinks.
So being as non-technical as possible, because I am. Mm. So apologies to any great, statisticians and computer scientists out there, because, you know, to dumb it down, to understand it, I think is really, really important. Certainly was for me. It is, think of autocomplete on steroids. And think back to the very first sort of use of a little Nokia phone when you were tapping in that autocomplete predictive text. So you imagine a computer system then that's been trained on vast, vast data sets, the internet, all the kind of text available on the internet up until 2025. It is unimaginable amounts of data. From that, it can understand and pattern match and see how sentences are created, how words, how subjects, how sectors, all that information, but it's based upon a pattern matching algorithm. It's actually statistical inference for any mathematicians out there. And it will infer from the inputs, the things you say, what the outputs should be based on this massive pattern matching brain. There is nothing to do, and this is a really critical point, there's nothing to do with truth generation in there. There's nothing to do with factual generation. It is not an encyclopedia. It has been trained on a very, very huge data set with variable accuracy, if you like, the internet per se. And therefore, you've got to think of it as matching patterns. It's predicting what is a really good answer, not what is a correct answer. There is no concept of correctness. But as you then put together these layers of kind of prediction, it starts to look like reasoning. It starts to look like, oh, well, this is likely to happen. So if they want a LinkedIn post on that, I'll start with this format and then I'll do this. That starts to really feel exactly like thinking to us.
That's really interesting, because you do think that it does think the way we think, and actually it's pattern matching. So is there a good way? I mean, we talked about interviewing, and that's one way. But is there a good way to, by understanding how it thinks, a good way for us to ask it questions?
That probably depends mostly on what it is you're actually trying to do with it. So if you are producing something that needs factual verification, so if you're in, a friend of mine works in AI very specifically for media, journalism and comms. And so, for example, from the point of view of journalism, fact-checking sources and things like that, the verification of facts is absolutely critical, but you can still use AI for that so much. You simply have to be the filter that is checking the sources. So one thing you can ask most chatbots to do is, if they have access to the web, which most do now, that it will check current facts and cite its sources. Yeah. That doesn't mean what it's written is factually correct, because it's doing the pattern matching as it writes it. But the source that's cited means you go, human in the loop, check the source, check what's written and go, okay, I am happy with that fact. And it gets a big tick.
Because one thing, and I know the models are changing all the time, so by the time you see this podcast, it probably isn't true, but things to be thinking about is that it was literally only a couple of weeks ago, and I was checking something and working out, and I was saying, is this all right? And it was going, that's fine. But don't forget, Donald Trump isn't the US president anymore.
That's wishful thinking.
but that takes on to our next point, really, which is the training data, which is why you should always check.
Yes.
You know, what you get. And it was an interesting fact about the training data, that ChatGPT has been trained on that can kind of give us these hallucinations?
Yes, so I did. I actually tested this morning, just randomly. It popped into my mind and I thought, I'll just check where this model is at the moment. Mm. And so I said, without doing a web search, give me a three-liner on the US-Iran situation and the Strait of Hormuz. And it came up with a general statement about Middle East tensions and that the Strait of Hormuz is a very critical thing and blah, blah. And I said, without checking the web, is the Strait of Hormuz currently open? And it came up with a yes, however, there are often tensions which mean that things change. So I said, right, okay, now go check the web and update your three-line summary. And it gave an accurate, as far as I'm aware, of the summary, the fact that there is a war between US and Iran at the moment and the Strait of Hormuz is partially blockaded and partially open dependent. Yeah. And I thought that was a fascinating example. The training data had probably closed around mid-2025. So doesn't relate to anything that's happened in that last year unless your model is looking at the web. And it won't necessarily do that by itself unless you guide it to, which is why the driving it and understanding how to drive the AI is so important.
So if we, obviously, you know, you may be watching this podcast a little bit after these events have happened, but if you're, asking ChatGPT about anything, we'll talk about, current stuff or whatever, what's the kind of language that you can use so that it will make you can lessen that chance of it getting it wrong?
A lot of it is down to knowing what good looks like on the output. Now, that's not quite the same question, I know that. But first of all, you need to be specific. If you're looking for sources, ask it to cite sources. If you need current information, ask it to search the web. If you want it to go to particular sources on the web, tell it to go to Reuters or the World Bank or the IMF if you're looking for, up-to-date financial information. So you have to, like guiding your intern with a job, very clever person, but I recommend you go and use these sources to put your report together. And whatever you do, don't go to the Flat Earth Society for your geographic info, that sort of thing. And then in terms of taking that further, in terms of actual language, the more context you give it, the better. So a lot of people find, you talked about rambling, then you were saying that when you instruct it, you often ramble. People like using the speech mode, because in the speech mode, you can do what I'm doing now, which is rambling, hopefully not too badly, and just literally say, I'm thinking of doing this, and I'm thinking of doing that. Actually, I'll do that. Can you please?
People will hear that. What they don't realise is you'd have said it to it in those exact words.
So there's not words like
line one, do this, line two, do that. You're not describing what you kind of said in a human way. You wrote it like that.
Yes, I did. And in that sort of thing, I would often use speech because it's much easier when you're explaining something without much cohesion or coherence. It's much easier to talk, isn't it? So often a lot of if they're typed, they start right. Yeah. Hi there, and I literally say, right, I want to try and do this.
Have you got a name for your Claude bot?
No.
Mine's called Ellis.
Oh, very good.
But you've been telling me ChatGPT is not as... I mean, it's a bit of an arms race between these things.
It is.
But and I know with generating images, mm-hmm. I tend to try and use... I'm not a literate person, but try and use prose and try and describe, mm-hmm. A sunny day or this person's walking or describing feelings of what they're mm-hmm. what they're doing. Someone's walking down a dark alley, there's mm-hmm. a beam of light going through across them. They're looking very pensive, looking towards the. You're almost kind of writing like a book. So there's lots of different ways in which you can prompt it, but you language and being bizarrely not a techie. Although being tech also does help, but it's kind of the range of skills that you have is not just for people who talk in ones and zeros anymore. It's for those people, but also these people who just chat.
For people like me now, because of the developments in the chatbots and the models, I can now say, I want an image that conveys or goes with this writing, or it goes with this website, or it's talking to this audience about this and I want them to feel in a certain way, or I want them to take this call to action, or whatever it is. Yeah. I can convey that in a much more businessy sort of briefing sense, like I would to a photographer okay, I want some really professional but playful imagery of people doing X, Y, Z. I don't know what the lighting is or the point of view or any of that stuff. And then I can ask the model to give me the prompt for the image tool. So I'd use a different specialist image generation tool, and I would ask maybe Claude to set up that prompt by telling it what I want the image to do, not how I want it to look, because I can't, I haven't got that language.
It's a tool where you can just operate in your language. You haven't got to change how you are or how you speak. It adapts to you. And talking about how you're talking there and not knowing something, it's really interesting, because actually if you're coming into AI brand new, what you have is loads of documentation already. So you might have a brand documentation about what nailed AI is, for example. So we're talking about tone of voice. You may have already written a document about, okay, so I'm nailed AI. I'm not going to talk like a tech bro. I'm going to talk like this. This is how I'm done. You write a document on your tone of language, a brand document, because then you can, there's literally a space in most chat, well, all ChatGPT bots, aren't there, where you can just upload all that documentation. So it's instantly, if you've written all this stuff, you can instantly upload it, and then you can brief it like you would brief, a photographer or an expert, and just say, this is how I'm going to brief you. So, okay, now I assume you're a videographer or a photographer. You've got all the documentation. I've just sent it to you. This is my brief to you. So you actually haven't changed the way you work at all, in a way, really.
You've onboarded it, just like a new employee, You'd give them your brand kit. You'd give them your tone of voice. If you were briefing an agency in something, you would have to give them all that anyway. And so it's exactly the same, it's called context. It's exactly the same context that you need to give to your AI to be able to do work for you and not just answer generic questions in a generic way.
Is that enough to give it your tone of voice, for example? So if you want it to write, the way you speak, is that enough to upload, the documents you would have written anyway when you're starting a business or have a business? Is there any other ways in which you can train it to kind of?
There's something I'd kind of say about writing, which I think is quite specific in terms of using AI for writing. I would say that together with the tone of voice, the brand, examples of what good looks like, maybe you've got a back catalogue of 20 articles you've written on a blog. Maybe you've got 100 old LinkedIn posts that you think are really fab. That is all the context you can give it. Give it everything, what you want it to look like, how you want it to be structured, and your brand and tone of voice. And then the output you'll get will be very similar in those formats and flavours. And then you can tweak that as you go, and that's great. However, if you want something to sound like you, an individual, I would say pause for a moment, because most individuals don't actually have, unless they are professional writers, a very, very consistent way of writing. So for example, when I'm writing, I'm processing my thoughts. So I don't stop writing, and I won't give that to an AI chatbot. Occasionally I'll ask for like ideas around a topic. So it might help me with blank page syndrome, which is that, I've got to write something on this. What am I going to do? That sort of thing. But if it's for company posts and company articles and things like that, you don't need to hear from an individual. And so AI can write much better in that sort of tone and way. But if it's meant to be from an individual, your readers are very, very good at spotting that kind of bullshit sort of thing out of AI,
The AI slot where it's like really nice, but quite empty.
They can spot something, even if it's only 5-10% off languages that you wouldn't have used, just the way of talking. People can spot that. And if they think that what's purported to be written by a person is written by AI, I think you do more damage than having bothered to write it yourself and writing.
So what would you recommend then as a process that someone could go through to get over that blank page? I think it's really, really important and gets you somewhere, but then not end up with something that's really detailed and vacuous like we would call AI slop.
It takes a lot more effort than people think. So again, the prompt and paste is that kind of worst possible situation. Giving it the context, so sit there and say, right, has it got the brand guidelines, the tone of voice? Has it got examples of what good really looks like? Has it got examples of the structure of the writing that I really like? So training it on lots and lots of material means that you're going to get really close to that quite early on. Then let's use the example of a proper professional LinkedIn post, but from an individual rather than from a company. So I have a friend of mine who is dyslexic, who does most of her sort of thought leadership. She works in the AI in accessibility. Is on LinkedIn, and she uses ChatGPT for almost all her writing. She starts off with it around that blank page, but she'll have a, right, here's my topic in my head. This is what I want to crack. I'm thinking of framing it like this, and maybe she'll put down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bullet points. And then she might dictate some stuff. You know, as I said, using that voice speech kind of thing, saying, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about that. I'm going to cite this report. I'm going to do this. You can see now she's not writing. She's briefing.
Yeah.
And then she'll say, make a draft. So it's not trying to produce finished copy. And that is really, really helpful. Because once it goes to finished copy, you get the AI generic, ooh, sounds like AI, could it be slop, sort of feeling. So she then gets the draft, starts reading it and starts writing it inside the draft and works through that. Then what she might do when she's happier with that, so that'll take her, say, half an hour to an hour, she might then give it back to the chatbot and ask for proofreading or suggestions for improvement, not editing it and producing a final output. She'll say, can you make suggestions on where I've, you know, have I repeated myself? Is it not making sense because of something I haven't seen? Again, being dyslexic, she's not good at proofreading or reading through her own copy. She'll then get it to read it out loud.
That's
so she
really
can listen to it because she can close her eyes, hear it like someone talking, and immediately see if she can make sense of it that way. So there's so many different ways she's learned to do it. But because she explained it used to take her at least half a day. These are thought leadership posts. They're not a quick wham bam on social media. It would take a half a day to write this because it was really tough for her. And it's proper serious stuff. She now does it in about an hour. So she's made a massive saving for somebody else that they might love writing, in which case just fill your boots, be the person that keeps on writing.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not, as you can tell, I'm into sound and video production. So that's kind of where my brain sits, but not necessarily in writing words, but we have to do it more and more, don't we? We have to kind of be across all these things. And for me, AI has been brilliant in getting off that blank page. And I haven't heard about draft mode. So I'm going to look at see how these chatbots do drafting.
There's a bit there just that's triggered something. Thinking about the tone of voice document. Now, solopreneurs and people like that, they don't have a tone of voice document. That's quite a company thing, really, isn't it? A policy thing. So if you are trying to work out what your tone of voice is, you can retro-engineer that with your chatbot by simply saying, here are my 10 favorite posts. I love these posts, or my audience really engaged with these. Maybe it's the topic, but maybe it's also the tone of voice. So you give it loads of samples of what the writing that you loved or that your audience has told you that they've loved in some way, either by metrics or with feedback, and say, what is the tone of voice inside this copy? So I find it really hard to tell someone else what my tone of voice is, but I know my own writing when I see it.
Yes.
And so what it can do then is look at it and say, well, how you write is like this. You tend to do this. You don't use these words. You do this style. You use the repetition of three when you say da-dum, 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 this sort of thing. So it might pull out the grammatical structures and things that you didn't even know you did, because it's implicit within your own writing, because you're too busy writing as you think or writing as you speak.
If you're trying to work out your style and go, okay, well, I do like that style and that style, or I like that person's writing. It won't necessarily be in your environment or your industry, but they can be quite good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there's writing that you love and you'd love to write like that, and writing isn't your skill, then you're going to have to get good from somewhere, aren't you? Mm-hmm. So yes, you can feed that in and say, you know, I want to see some sample writing. Give me some examples of how this might be written in different voices, and then see what's yours. And so work with your AI as a thinking partner. I think probably my biggest leap a couple of years ago was about using AI as a thinking partner. So when I don't know what to do about something or don't know how to get to a good outcome, I sit there and say, well, okay, how do we do this? What do I need to know? What do I need to think about? And immediately it has a very, very strong capability around strategy and soundboarding and things like that.
And I'll tell you what's also really interesting is that because I don't see AI as perfect, even when it's wrong, that's been really, really helpful. Do you know what I mean? When you've gone, look, I need an idea for this, and you know what you are in your gut, and it goes, oh, actually, why don't you try this? And you go, no, that's not what I want. But you know, knowing what you don't want is also, it narrows it down, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something inside all of us. There's the intuition and the experience of doing your job. It's much harder for younger people there, I think, working with AI when they haven't got the experience of what good might look like or what might not be a good idea. They haven't yet created that judgment because they haven't had a chance to learn and apply and gain that experience, which is what brings good judgment, really, isn't it? Yeah. So it is harder there. But when you're a bit more weathered, perhaps as you and I are, when that's the case, then you really start to know, like, no, that is not a good idea and it wouldn't work with my audience, and I just know that.
So we talked about some really good examples of how we can use it. But if you're still trying to get on the AI bandwagon, you know, why should we be motivated to start jumping on AI? Why should we be bothered in a world where we've got to learn something else new again? And because, you know, it's moving so fast, why should we want to jump on this conveyor belt? Because, you know, we could be outdated in a couple of weeks sometimes.
I think answering that question slightly backwards is that feel of overwhelmingly fast change is completely real. It's real for me. It's real for everybody who's in AI. It's real for everybody who isn't as well. And I think it's important to sort of say that is really normal to feel overwhelmed. There's so many new tools coming out all the time. It's got new capabilities. It all feels too fast. But going back to that's the idea of the Chinese proverb of, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree is 50 years ago. That's like, oh, but the next best time is now. And that's like, okay, that's fine. Now, do something. Go a little playful. Get on the bandwagon. But why? Why maybe for the next generation for whom it's going to become absolutely like electricity, it's going to be bread and butter, it's going to be in the background. If we're not there to support them through that as well, where are they getting some of their, you know, benchmarking and values and ethical approach to things like AI from? If you're more cynical, then you're a really, really important voice, because things around the environmental effects, the ethical effects, you know, risks, security, etc. We need all those cynical, cautious voices balancing out the opportunity voices, the excitement, etc. Getting on that bandwagon, it's here to stay. So putting your head in the sand and ignoring it, I don't know if that's really a very helpful strategy for anyone.
I had a picture from a school. So we want to use it on our website, and it was a picture of these girls on a boat, and it was a great picture. And said, "Can you crop the image for me? Because the girl sitting down there on her phone on a school trip in the boat, just what, you know, kids do. Can you crop it?" And I went, "No, I don't have to do that." I drew a circle around her holding her phone, and I said, "Please, can she be holding, I don't know, a bit of rope?"
Charles Dickens.
Yeah. Or a bit of rope, like she's doing it. And it literally gave me three different ways in which she could be holding a rope with her hand. 5-second job. All I had to say is, please, she not be holding a phone?
I think that's a brilliant use case example on image generation of where the fun thing for a creative is not removing the phone with the tiny rubber once you've done all your layering and zooming in and replacing it with something. That's probably not very fun, is it? It's probably not what they really want to spend all day doing. So if you can get those things kind of out the way, done by AI, you can spend longer thinking, how am I going to compose this whole picture into something beautiful and stunning for the school that tells a real story? And that's where the value is, isn't it? And so if you get rid of some of that grunt work, then that's a great use case.
Someone was saying we've had AI with us for decades in one form or another, but it's creeping into all our tools now. Just knowing how to talk to it can save us many hours of work and be a source of inspiration, right?
Yeah. Yes. It's in so many of those, either the back office business tools, like they might be, I don't know, CRM systems or HR systems or anything in the back office. It's in all those industry tools, you know, from a marketing perspective and that sort of thing, whether it's Final Cut Pro or Figma or Photoshop or Canva or everything, they've all got AI within them. And if, like you, you're pressing ignore, like you were, then you're really missing out on the opportunity to hand over some of those really boring jobs, the ones that supercharge you in terms of speed, because you don't want to spend half an hour editing the tiniest little thing out of an image when you could be putting some proper creative judgment into the actual challenge. And yeah, knowing how to generally drive and talk to AI means that when you turn anything on, you've got your starting place straight away. It's like, hey, how do I edit out this picture of a girl's, of a phone in a girl's hand? And it'll say, well, just put a ring around it and tell me to edit it out. It's like, great, do that.
You know, I've done that an awful lot, actually. I mean, Claude and ChatGPT, and there are loads of other chatbots. Mm-hmm. I've literally just opened up a page and I've just said, I've got, you know, X software. I want to do Y. Mm-hmm. How do I do it? Another one is actually, you know, if you're running a business, and I haven't got an accountant, and I must get one.
Yeah.
You know, just opening up the chatbot and go, I've got this software, I need to do X or Y. How do I get started? What do I do? And, you know, that's all I said. I said, I need to open a bank account. This is the bank. How do I apply? And it took me through step by step.
Yeah.
And now I know how to use accounting tools. And all I've done is use ChatGPT just by asking, I don't know what to do. How do I do it? Well, I'm going to be on the end of the phone.
I have a project set up in ChatGPT, which is my tech support assistant. So it knows my technology stack, so to speak, as in it knows what Microsoft subscription level I'm on. It knows which AI tools I use. It knows even my type of keyboard and my computer and things like that. So if I get error messages and issues and bits and pieces, I can say, what do I do? You know, now I've got this error message and I can just take a screenshot and paste it in. I get really mixed results. I will say that. So sometimes it's the step-by-step helping and it's absolutely brilliant and it's a godsend. And then sometimes it will just be giving you sort of out-of-date information for slightly different ways. Because again, it's not a truth-generating engine, and that includes solving your problems. It doesn't generate truth. It gives you very, very likely solutions for the problems that you've got. Oh yes, forgot that.
I've got to say, it gets me 95% there, and only one time has it been really quite spectacularly wrong. I've had to phone someone up and they go, stop.
Do not do that.
Do not do that. And it wouldn't have, I mean, you know, and sometimes you phone up IT people or accountants, they go, oh, you're a ChatGPT person, are you? Again, got a head in their hands or a bit of a face palm.
That brings up an interesting point in terms of just business use and saving money with AI and things like that, which is, again, this using it as a kind of non-exec director in your company, like a CFO, chief finance officer, if you don't have one in a small business, you know, or a marketing person or a legal person. Now, I'm not saying use AI to get to draft all your contracts and send them out the door without them being checked. Do not do that. But you imagine if you had something that might take a lawyer 4 hours, you're drafting proper T's and C's, contracts, bits and pieces. You could use AI to get yourself 90% there just with common sense and answering the right questions, have it interview you, tell it what you're trying to do. Then you could take those to a lawyer and pay perhaps for 1 hour instead of 4 hours of their time, where they simply review and amend and sign off. Now you've got legally, you know, top-notch work as signed off by the lawyer, but you've spent a quarter of the money. And that works really with any professional services. And you can see the impact then immediately on the jobs of those people in professional services. So they are having to review how they do things and how their clients come to them and the type of work they offer.
That's really interesting, actually. It's what I would call shoulders of giant stuff, isn't it? In the quite recently I had a bit of a legal thing, and it got to the point, actually, when my wife said, I think your ChatGPT is now talking to their ChatGPT, and we're kind of firing ChatGPT legals at each other.
It could go very sideways.
So I then had to go to a proper legal person. But what I found was, when I say to shoulders of giants, is that because I'd gone through ChatGPT quite a lot, and this had happened, these kind of correspondence with this other person was happening about 4 or 5 times, what I was unable to do was get the most out of that professional legal advice.
Yeah.
So I knew what questions to ask.
Yes.
Whereas before, you were going and wander around. So in that hour of time, rather than ask, kind of starting from base, you're able to go, I need to know this, 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 and this, and then get to an output that's much better quality at the end of your hour that you've paid for than it would have been going, coming out and going, oh, I need to ask that.
But you get where you're going. You get there quicker. You get there more cheaply. And that ultimately allows you to kind of get more done or get some very, very valuable work done at a very low rate, which is fantastic.
If you want to start leaning into AI and it's everywhere, where would you say is your kind of mindset and where would be your first point to go? What would be your first thought and first thing to do?
I think the real starting point for kind of beginners is definitely personal use, just because that feels very, sort of easy to do. So anything from like gardening advice, personal training advice, sort of nutrition, you know, things like that. So I send it photos of my plants in the spring, the ones that haven't come back green and beautiful, and say, what is this or what do I do? Or I'll take a snapshot of the label, photograph of the label and a photograph of my dead plant and say, is it going to come back? And it's like, no, wait, this one doesn't grow till May. Calm down. And it's like, so I use it a lot for gardening and things like that, because I don't know a lot about plants, but I'm loving learning. And so each time I do it, I'm learning stuff and it's useful. And those are really, really, obviously that nothing matters about the data sharing. There's no security risk. There's none of those things to think about. You can't do anything wrong. It's just like Googling, but without having to look at a whole load of websites on a tiny little phone. It's just like having, you know, Monty Don in your ear, just gently saying, oh dear, Kim, what have you done to your garden? And it's just really nice. So I'd really recommend they start with just hobbies and interests and that sort of thing.
There's ChatGPT, there's Claude. What are the kind of the ranging? Because they obviously one overtakes the other. So what's the gamut of
well, trying out? The real four chatbots that people are sort of getting a chance to use at work more sort of seriously would be, as you said there's ChatGPT to start with. There's Claude. There's Gemini, which is owned by Google. And there's Copilot, which is owned by Microsoft. Because Gemini is part of the Google Workspace. If you're a Google Workspace user, then that's probably the chatbot you would use because it'll be paid for within that. If you're a Microsoft user, and in bigger companies, this is almost always the case, then Copilot is going to probably be the only tool you have available to you because of their policy and data security and things like that. It's really important not to use the tools outside what you're permitted to use at work. That's actually called shadow AI, which is a bit of a ghostly term, but it's been shadow technology for a long time, and now they're just calling it shadow AI, which is when employees in a company use their own tools. And this is a huge governance and compliance and cybersecurity issue for companies to tackle. Yeah.
But with the security though, I mean that's a really interesting one, is that you shouldn't be using your own chatbot to do work stuff. But we haven't really talked about, because obviously one thing it does do is share data. And I know it's kind of a whole other conversation to have about security. But, you know, there are ways using chatbots at different levels of subscription where you can make sure that the data stays secure. So there's a lot of work going on at the moment, right, to make sure that, you know, I've been talking to IT companies where, you know, a lot of work's going on with companies that need to keep their data secure. And that can be done within AI, right?
Definitely. And it needs to be led by the company. It's not the individual users, you know, challenge. The company needs to have its own understanding, needs to have its own rules. It needs to know where its data is and what they're doing with AI. But even more importantly, it needs to educate all its people about using AI in safe ways, which are quite simple. You know, this is quite basic literacy. It might only be half a day's course, something like that, you know, and then all the employees will be like, oh, I understand why I shouldn't do this. And I know I won't do that. And we won't be doing this. And if that happens, I know what to do. And that really is that first level of security sort of sorted. And companies need to know that free tools aren't going to give them that level of confidence. Yeah. And they might be breaking other laws in the process.
Great. Kim Mason from Nailed AI, it's been a pleasure to have you over and to chat to you.
Thank you very much for having me, Darren.
If you want to kind of take a summary of what Kim said, we've got the show notes, of course. So that'll just kind of summarise everything we've talked about. And also on our website, you can get the show notes from our website, landanddeliver.co.uk. And that'll give you the show notes, the summary of what we talked about. And also, if you want to get hold of Kim to talk to you about AI in a human way, so you can start to get to be more confident with AI, then that's where you need to go. So landanddeliver.co.uk. Kim, lovely to chat to you. And until next time, we'll see you then.